Hello, welcome to your meditation practice as part of the Open Heart Project. My name is Susan Piver. I am delighted to sit with you. We're going to practice for 10 minutes and we're going to start soon. So please take your seat and get settled, whether you're on a cushion on the floor with your legs crossed loosely in front of you or in the equally spiritual chair or sofa. And sit comfortably, but if possible, sit with your feet flat on the floor, please. But most important is to sit comfortably, but not slumpy. So before we sit, I want to thank you, those of you who responded to my little survey. How's it going? How are these videos working for you? And if you missed that or want to respond, there'll be a link here somewhere. But I got a lot of responses from you, and I'm extremely grateful. And hi. It's nice to get to know you a little better. One of the things that many people mentioned was they'd like to learn more about Buddhism in just regular language. Not because anyone wants to become a Buddhist, always optional, not required in any way. But there's some interest, I would say, not, and this is my guess, not in I want to be a Buddhist practitioner on the Buddhist path. Rather, my sense is that what you're interested in is, what is this wisdom and how can I apply it to my life without worrying if I'm a Buddhist or not a Buddhist, which is a really good question. There's wisdom along this path that is just applicable, period. You don't have to adopt any beliefs. In fact, beliefs are considered an obstacle in this particular case. You don't have to change anything. You just listen and take what makes sense to you and ignore the rest. One thing that makes this possible is that Buddhism is considered a non-theistic tradition, meaning there's no deity in the center of the religion, which is interesting. And for those of us raised in Judeo-Christian traditions or religions, kind of weird. It's so ingrained in us. We're wired, whether we know it or not, I would say, to some degree, to think that there's somebody out there who's keeping score and hopefully loves us and might punish us if we do something bad. I don't know. There's all sorts of ways that people approach a relationship to a deity. And of course, what I just said is stupidly simplistic. So if you are connected to a theistic tradition, great. Congratulations. That's fantastic. May it serve you. And we can all still benefit from Buddhist wisdom, because Buddhist wisdom will never ask you to choose between this God and that God. So what I'm leading up to here is I want to spend the next series of videos talking about foundational Buddhist teachings briefly. Another thing that you all mentioned to me was, I like that these videos are short. So cool. I do too. This one may be a little longer than normal, just because I'm wading in. And if you want to skip ahead to the meditation, there's a time code here. You can do that, certainly. So, long, long ago, 2,500 plus years ago, there was a person named Siddhartha Gautama, a.k.a. Buddha, who sought to liberate himself and everyone from suffering. According to the history or the lore, you take your pick, he was born a prince and had everything taken care of. It lacked for nothing. And one day, and his father, the king, instructed all those around the historic Buddha to just don't hassle him with the suffering of everyday life. So I had everything. However, one day he was being driven in a chariot by his charioteer named Chandaka, I don't know if I pronounced that correctly. And as they were driving along, they passed by someone who was very old and feeble. And the Buddha had never seen any such person. And he's like, "What's up with that guy?" And Chandaka said, that's an old person. We're all going to go there. Buddha was like, "What?" They keep going on their journey and they see a corpse by the side of the road for whatever reason. And Buddha's like, "What's up with that?" And Chandaka said, "That person has died." And just they're departed from their body. And Buddha was like, "That's not right. That doesn't sound right." So I'm making light of obviously the most important and serious things in life. But from that moment on, he aspired to not have that happen to himself and to all beings as well. And not just old age and death, but all the kinds of pain that we suffer. Because in the Buddhist view, birth is considered painful too. There's it's a huge transition from someplace to someplace else that is foreign. So he began to experiment with all the practices of his day, much as some of us may be doing, although he first left his palace and just threw himself onto the tides of reality. And if we maybe experiment with yoga, shamanic journeying, giving up gluten, plant-based medicines, A Course in Miracles, all these things that are available to us, we may try all those things. I've tried a lot of the ones I just mentioned. But we may find, what's kind of interesting, but I'm still going to get old and die, and so is everybody else. What's up with that? That's what the Buddha found. And I don't know what his practices were, but they probably were yogic in some way, asceticism, deprivation, subjecting himself to the elements with the hope of waking up. And those, presumably, he learned things from that. But one day he's like, "Well, I'm still me. I'm just going to sit under this tree. I'm not going to move until I'm enlightened." And so he did, according to some stories, for 8 days or so. And as his mind settled, because he was sitting in meditation doing a practice exactly like or extremely similar to the one we are fixing to do shortly. So you're doing what he did. And you have all the questions that he had, I'm sure. As his mind settled, it settled more. And then it settled some more and some more. And as he was about to attain liberation, his mind clarified completely to see the true nature of reality and therefore the way out of suffering, aka enlightenment. Beings, energies, I don't know what, called Maras, M-A-R-A-S, we're like, "Well, someone's about to become enlightened. We need to put a stop to this. He's going to screw up everything." Or whatever they said to themselves in Mara language. And so they tried to distract the Buddha by making noise. I'm not sure what order they did these things in, but made a lot of noises. That would distract me. How that said, they've just built a subway stop outside of our apartment out there. So yeah, it was distracting. They made horrible odors. That would really distract me. And they then taunted the Buddha. "Who are you to think you could become enlightened? You're not so special. Whatever you're seeking isn't really there. You should try this other thing." I'm sure we're all familiar with those statements. We say them to ourselves or others have said them to us. So even shaming the Buddha did not deter him from becoming enlightened, and he woke up. from the trance that I myself, I cannot speak for you, am still in. So then, and this is going to wrap up shortly, he went back to his community of fellow practitioners and explained to them what he saw. He saw four things, and these are called the Four Noble Truths. And today we're going to talk about the first noble truth. Next week, the second. The week after that, the third noble truth. And the week after that, we're going to start on the fourth noble truth, which has eight steps. A lot of numbers here. Because the fourth noble step is called the Eightfold Path. So the first and second truths are like, well, this is the conundrum we're in. What the hell? And the second and the final two noble truths are like, well, here's what to do now. So we're going to start with the truth, the first noble truth. And again, if you want to go right to the meditation, please do. The first noble truth, the first thing that the Buddha told his compadres was, life is suffering. This doesn't seem like it's going to a good place if that's where we're starting. Life is suffering. The Sanskrit word is dukkha, D-U-K-K-H-A. Is this transcribed in English anyway? And it doesn't mean life sucks. Sometimes dukkha is translated as uneasiness or anxiety, distress or stress. Dissatisfying. I think that's a good one. Life is unsatisfying, or there's a pervasive sense of unease, even when things are going really well. So that's largely what he meant by suffering. And if you examine your experience, see what you find. Maybe you're going to find a different first noble truth, in which case, call me, let me know, because I would be very interested, and I'm kind of joking and I'm kind of not. You have to see if you think this is true. That's the most important thing. When I look around, and I'm lucky, I live somewhere, I have food to eat, I have a car, I have a relationship, I have cats, I have this work to do. These are really fortunate things. And I forget that a lot. So I'm just saying, however, I have all sorts of good fortune and privilege. And still, I look around and I'm like, I have dissatisfaction on one end of the spectrum with everything from, I think our couch is getting old and has a hole in it. What should I do? Very small. To, I am longing to write another book. And I don't know how. I don't know if I can. And I'm scared. For my life, those are kind of ordinary dissatisfactions, but painful nonetheless. There's also the dissatisfaction. So that's, let's just say dissatisfaction on one end of the suffering spectrum. And on the other end, grief, rage, loss. Everything we have, we will also lose. Please examine your experience for exceptions to this rule. Everything we have, we will also lose. So much of life, and I'll speak for myself again, is spent trying to make that not happen. And it's one of the three sort of patterns of suffering is, I don't want this to happen, so I'm going to pretend it's not. And I'll explain all three in a moment. So I think it's, we can suffice to say that dukkha, suffering, uneasiness, points to the truth that everything dissolves. Everything that lives will die. Everything we have that we want, we will lose. Sorry. Everything we fear, we can't actually protect ourselves against. There's no safety. And for some reason, maybe because we're mammals, we're wired to find safety. And on good days, we can. But nonetheless, it remains true that we can't hold on and we can't ward off sufficiently to dispel the uneasiness of being human. Okay, that's the first noble truth, shortened to life is suffering. So there are three kinds of suffering. Suffering is like a big topic here in Buddhism. So there's eight categories and three kinds and all sorts of things. So the first category of suffering is called the suffering of suffering. It's kind of what I just said. It's we can't actually guard against suffering. The ordinary things of life that we all share are all forms of suffering. Being born, growing old, hopefully, dying. Those are painful things, and we can't avoid them. Period. The second kind of suffering is called the suffering of change, which also we already discussed briefly. Everything's going to go away. Everything is going to come back and go away again. Things are constantly changing, and there is no moment where we lock it down. It's very strange. I don't know who designed this, but everything is constantly pulsing in and out of existence. And because of that, I would say we have the third category of suffering, which is called all-pervasive suffering, which is the general sense of sort of uneasiness and difficulty in finding satisfaction. And it's like ambient. It's like ambient suffering. Like I'm going to get something I really want, and I'm really happy about it. But right in there is also, well, what if I don't get it? Or what if I lose it? Or what if I have it? That means someone else can't have it. There's this kind of doubt accompanies our experience. Please examine yours to see if that is not so. So why is this helpful? Because it is helpful on the spiritual journey, which you are all on, because that's why we're here together. People on my roof. Begins with recognizing the truth. And the truth will set you free. So without this first step of seeing clearly, we remain on the treadmill of, let me get what I want, let me avoid what I don't want, let me try to lock my situation down, and then I'll think about others, then I'll do my creative work, then I'll be happy. No, because that will never happen. I mean, you could be happy and all those other things, but it's not lockdownable. And the spiritual journey begins not with accepting that, because that would be disingenuous. It begins with examining yourself and your experience to see if that is not so. So I recommend it. And it's not fun, particularly, but it is the first step on the path of liberation from suffering, is to see the suffering that is real. And because we can see it, we can also see relief from suffering and where it might come from. So next week, we're going to talk about the second noble truth, the cause of suffering, which is called grasping. Then the third noble truth, which is called the cessation of suffering, getting to the good stuff. And then we'll spend 8 videos talking about the fourth noble truth, which is the noble eightfold path, which is like, well, how do you do all that? Let's break it down. The eightfold path is like, okay, let's break it down. It starts with right view, right intention, right speech, and so on. So, thanks for going on this ride with me. It's incredible that we can do this together. I'm very grateful. And let's practice. Begin your practice, please, by forgetting about everything I just said and everything you thought about everything I just said. Just let go. Just let go. Establish your posture. Legs crossed loosely in front of you if you're on the floor, or feet flat on the floor if you're on a chair, although secretly I like sitting on a chair with my legs crossed. But however you choose to sit, find a sense of upliftedness in your back body. The hands rest on the legs, palms down. This is actually a mudra called resting the mind mudra, or gesture. So we're not trying to make the hands work for us. We're just going, take a break, let's rest. So just let them settle on your legs somewhere above the knee or at mid-thigh, and feel a sense of rest and easiness come into your hands. And you might feel your own warmth through your palms. At the same time, you're just sitting there. So. Let the front body soften. Relax. Let go. Let the belly soften. Let the shoulders relax. Soften the area around your heart and relax your throat and all the muscles of speech, the tongue, the jaw, and let go of the inclination to speak because you don't need it right now. The eyes are open and the gaze is cast down to a comfortable spot in front. I know there are people who prefer to sit with their eyes closed. Okie doke. But if we want to know the truth about our lives, about suffering, about where we are, it helps to be awake. And to be awake, it helps to have our eyes open, to see where we are. And if you're visually impaired, you can apply this to the ears. So the gaze is cast down to a comfortable spot in front. And you're not looking for anything, but you're aware of seeing. Seeing is just happening, or hearing. No problem. Relax the eyes. And whatever is behind the eyes. And relax the brow. Let your attention come to rest on your breath. Your body is breathing in and out. We don't want to observe that, we want to feel it. So feel this inhale, and then notice the exhale. Or feel the exhale. And then the next inhale will just happen. Feel that. Stay as best you can with the cycle of breath, breathing in and out. You can imagine that your mind, which will continue to produce thoughts, no problem, is like a snow globe. You shake and everything swirls around. And right now we put that down. And one by one, all the thoughts sort of fall to the surface and disappear. This happens on its own. You don't have to try. In fact, the less you try, the better. However, if you notice that you become absorbed in a line of thought, not a thought, a line of thought, like you've shaken the snow globe again, no problem. Notice that. Label it thinking. Very precise. That's thinking. Different from meditating. Then just let go. Like the snow flake falls to the ground. Come back to this body breathing, this breath, and begin again. Feeling the body breathe. So we'll sit together in silence for a few minutes until you hear the gong. Thank you so much for your practice. Thank you for practicing with me. Thank you for practicing together. And may our practice benefit all beings. Thank you.